Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In 4 days, we begin a new political era, the era of Donald Trump as President of the United States. At On Point, we've committed to keeping your voices front and center in that transition and beyond. Today, we're teaming up with NPR and its reporters, who have just hosted a fresh round of town halls and panels across the country, asking about hopes and fears for these next 4 years. We'll hear from those conversations and from you this hour on Point, a nation engaged. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you want the new president to know about your community, your hopes now, your fears? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Welcome to those of you watching this live on Facebook. If you'd like to check it out, go to our Facebook page, On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Sam Sanders, politics reporter for NPR, co-host of NPR's Politics podcast. He helped moderate one of 4 big NPR conversations across the country last week in Houston, Milwaukee, Durham, and Sacramento. Sam was in Sacramento. Sam Sanders, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hey, Tom. Nice to be here.
You know, I feel like we've been listening for over a year now, but everybody's really listening intently since the vote, and everyone's really listening intently now that Donald Trump is about to take the oath of office. We've been doing that here at On Point. NPR's been doing it with A Nation Engaged. What was the purpose of these town halls and panels across the country last week, Sam?
Yeah, just to tap into the mood of voters, you know, post-election. We talked with 32 folks from Sacramento area last week, and we basically asked them, what are your hopes and your fears for the new president? What do you want him to know? And my big takeaway was that people are still really raw with their emotions. There was this feeling that that I had, at least, that some feelings would be soothed a post-election, people would calm down, but people on both sides of the aisle are still really either angry or fearful about this new president. We talked to a few supporters of Trump who said that they think the other side has not given him a fair shake yet. They pointed to stories that they call fake news and just constant attacks on him before he even takes office. And then we spoke to folks who didn't support Trump, who said that they think this guy is just too volatile. He's tweeting too much. Mm-hmm. He's saying too much before he even takes office.
This whole series of conversations working with Capital Public Radio in California, Sacramento, WUNC in North Carolina, that was in Durham, Houston Public Media, Wisconsin Public Radio, and Milwaukee Public Radio. I want to dive right in to get the sound of the nation in conversation with itself and here today at On Point with all of us. This was in the Sacramento Town Hall. This was last Wednesday night, I guess. Sam Sanders was co-moderating. He asked an audience member there in California, in Sacramento, Eric, about division in his own community.
Do you think that your community is as divided as it might seem in the media?
Well, I live in Roseville. I live in Placer County, which is one of the most Republican counties in California. Most people I know voted for Trump. I voted for Trump, and I feel like there's this idea floating around in the media, especially in the elite media. If you look at publications like The Atlantic and The New Yorker, and they're like, oh my goodness, how could all of these people have voted for Trump? I feel like what's happened is there's certain liberal citadels, basically, on the coast, you know, L.A., San Francisco, Boston, New York City, Washington, D.C., where they're like, you know, oh my goodness, this Trump, he's horrible. But then you have a huge section of America in between where everybody was like, well, you know, it's about time somebody finally said that.
So what brings those two factions together?
I think things like this. I think that...
Good answer.
I'm a Trump voter. You know, like, am I scary? Am I horrible? You know what I mean? I think that when we can sit down and talk to each other and meet each other and see that we're all human beings, I feel like that's it.
That sounds nice. But as you say, Sam Sanders, you were there in Sacramento. There are a lot of very wrought up feelings in the country as well. If I may, Sam, let me take the microphones right across the country to another one of these sessions that was going on at the same time. This was in Durham, North Carolina. NPR's Asma Khalid was co-moderating there. And this is audience member Kirk Montgomery. This is district chair for the State Employees Association of North Carolina. He said that when Trump says make America great again, he means make America hate again or make America white again. Former North Carolina Governor Bev Perdue was there, a Democrat. She reacted talking about racial divisiveness and calling on Americans to put aside their differences. Here we go from Durham.
My concerns are basically that Donald Trump came about saying make America great again. And to me, it seems it's more make America hate again because of all the racial disbursement that's happening with inside of the whole country. And so what I'm trying to figure out is that, you know, how can we unite when a president is saying, okay, let's build a wall, you know, let's ban Muslims, let's do all these things that are not of the American people. So my concern is I just want him to know that we as Americans, and me especially as an African-American, you know, we saw for the last 8 years we had an African-American president. He made great strides in helping the race relationships across the United States. But now he's coming in, and a lot of people are feeling that, okay, making America great again is making America white again. And that's my concern and my worries.
Governor Perdue, I mean, I'd like to hear from a Democrat as well as a Republican on how, I mean, what would your advice be to Donald Trump? How do you unite the country at this point?
My advice to the president-elect would be for him to be more thoughtful and to put away his Twitter vocabulary. I do strongly believe that there is real racial divisiveness in this country. I believe that. I believe the things that in the campaign that were said about women were despicable things. But I'm hopeful because this is America, after all. And at the end of the day, all of us in this room and listening to this broadcast are Americans. And I urge the president-elect to think the same thing and to adopt that philosophy that this is not about all the words I've said in the campaign. If I do well as president, I can get reelected if that's his priority. For him, the next 4 years have to be about America and Americans, all of us, regardless of our sex, race, creed, or color. It's got to be about making America work again for all of us and giving all of us equal opportunity at the heights of power. And if he would do that, I would be the first one to cheer him on. I have hope until January 21st that that might happen. And I believe as Americans, we must hope that. Because if I don't hope success for him, I'm no better off than some of the things that were said in this very divisive campaign. We all have to want the best for our country. Because if he does well, all of us do well.
There from Durham, North Carolina last week as part of NPR's A Nation Engaged series of conversations across the country. Sam Sanders was moderating in California. We're going to hear from a couple of participants in these conversations in just a moment here. Sam, you can talk about let's hold hands and do this right. But as you say, it was clear very often in these conversations that that is not a super simple thing to pull off.
Totally. And I think what exacerbates some of the emotion that we're seeing right now with voters of all stripes is this big feeling of uncertainty. When you look at what Donald Trump has said and tweeted since he won the election, there's just a lot of contradictions. And even people that love Trump and support Trump will admit that they don't take everything he says seriously. So the question now is, does that change when he's president? A lot of people don't know when to take him at his word. And unless that changes, you're not going to see, I think, more voters get behind this new president. Last week, his approval rating was 37%. And I think a lot of that is part of people not knowing what to expect from him.
Of course, there were also voices in these conversations saying, look, we can do this. We can get along. Sacramento last week, town hall, James Jenkins was there. We'll hear from him in just a moment. He said we should still be able to get along apart from our differences.
I just want to say, I don't think that we have to agree, but I think that as Americans, there was a time when we would disagree, but we would all get along. Mm-hmm. And there's just something that seeped into society today where, well, if you don't agree with me, then you're a mean, evil, bad person. And I think when you, Mr. Reyes, I think it is, when you said you have no friends that are Republicans, I'll be glad to be your friend. And anybody else in here who might be not disagree with me, but hey, we can still be friends. That's the key thing, I think.
James Jenkins, last week with The Nation Engaged in Sacramento, California, where my guest Sam Sanders was as well. James Jenkins joins us now from Sacramento. Voted for Donald Trump, Republican, serves on the Placer County Republican Central Committee. James Jenkins, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here and with us from Houston, Texas, where another one of these conversations was going on. Grace Rodriguez is with us. She voted for Hillary Clinton, independent but progressive in her politics. Grace, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for including me.
How did you find the mood, Grace, in Houston when you all sat down to talk about where we stand now?
It was very somber. It's very interesting. Houston is actually, it leans left as a city, even though it's in a right-leaning state. So a lot of people were also thinking, somebody mentioned earlier about taking him seriously. Some people were talking about, you know, we took him literally on the left side. We took him literally, but not seriously. Whereas on the right, they took him seriously, but not literally. So the talk about the divisive rhetoric, we were focusing so much on the rhetoric and not thinking through what was going to happen, actually.
James Jenkins, did you start out supporting Donald Trump? Did you come in late to the game on that front?
Good question. I started off not supporting Donald Trump in the primaries. And as he emerged as the victor, then to me, he was the only choice I could go with, given the things that are important to me.
So for you, it was Trump because of his policies, or was Trump because you weren't going to support Hillary Clinton?
You know, I think it's twofold. I think it's a little bit of both. One is that I think that the direction of the country was so bad. And again, I know my perspective is a little different from most people in the state, but it was going in such a bad direction that it had to be turned around and that we needed to go in a different direction.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. 4 days before the swearing-in of Donald Trump on Inauguration Day this Friday, we are talking about the hopes and fears of Americans for the next 4 years. We're teaming up with NPR's A Nation Engaged project to turn the microphone to you and to citizens across the country. We've held town halls in Houston, Milwaukee, Sacramento, Durham, North Carolina. We'll listen in to those in this hour and talk with some of the participants, and we invite your calls. What do you think? What does this country, what does your community need now? And what do you want the incoming president to know? What are your hopes, your fears for the Trump years? James Jenkins was at the town hall in Sacramento, California. Sam Sanders of NPR was helping moderate that. They're both with us. Grace Rodriguez was at the gathering in Houston, Texas, and she joins us today from Texas. In Durham, North Carolina, here's just a little bit. Fritz Meyer, professor of political science at Duke University, talked about the depths of polarization he sees now around the country.
We're polarized by urban and rural. We're polarized by gender. We're polarized by age. We're polarized by North and South. And we're certainly polarized by party. And there's an edge to the polarization that we haven't really seen in a long time. Certainly, I can't think of a moment, perhaps in 68, where it's not just that we disagree with the other side, but certainly in this campaign, there was a sense in which the other side was illegitimate, where there was really no bonds of trust.
There's an edge to the polarization. Sam Sanders felt it in Sacramento, others around the country. At the same time, people were showing up to talk with one another. There in California, this was David. This was a Trump supporter saying, give Trump a chance.
I think what people have to do, the practical thing to do, is to allow the policies to go forward because they're going to see what the effect is. Are more people employed than were unemployed in a couple of years? Are the welfare rolls less? Is education better? Because that was one of the things he brought up in the inner cities, improving the public education in inner cities. And that's why he put Ben Carson in there, by the way, in at the HUD. So let's see what results the policies produce. And if it makes America better, then let's admit to that. going about it as he's the enemy right now, I think is futile.
Give him a chance. Give him a chance. We'll look at how that went down. Race came up early and often in many of these conversations. Let's go to Houston, and a panelist there, John Covarrubias, talked about the rhetoric from President-elect Trump, soon to be the president. He said it touched his personal life when people shouted in his window waiting at a stoplight about building a wall.
As a Hispanic, I'm not an immigrant. I was born here. Unfortunately, some of the things have been said over the past year, the people who have heard this are actually directing their anger toward illegal immigration at me. And because of my skin color. And this has happened to me just a few weeks ago where some people pulled up next to me and yelled, build the wall. And it took me a few minutes to understand, why did they say that to me? The tone of our president-elect is not right for the president. And I think he needs to change that.
American Voices out of Houston, Texas, out of Milwaukee. Here was Fred Royal, president of the Milwaukee branch of the NAACP at the Milwaukee event last week, talking about racial division and saying that the country may not unite under Donald Trump, but that there is a future where things are going to be different.
We know that in 2040, the demographics are going to be a minority majority, right? It's inevitable. So that voice is only going to get louder. That counter that David Clark said is time to bring out the pitchforks and the lanterns is not going to come from the right. It's going to come from the left.
That was, of course, Milwaukee Sheriff David Clark, who had called for pitchforks and torches to rally for Donald Trump. And one more from Milwaukee, and then I wanted to bring it to you, James and Grace and Sam Sanders. In Milwaukee, Sharon Bloomberg shared her concern about empathy and listening, saying that it is not happening frequently enough. NPR's Don Gagne was there. He gave it to Julianne Appling, president of the conservative Wisconsin Family Action, to respond.
My concern is I see a lack of empathy. And I think that where we're never going to completely agree with each other on issues, the ability to listen to each other, the ability to at least try to understand the position from where somebody else comes, that's something critical. And I am concerned. I think we need to say to Donald Trump and to his entire appointed staff, you need to take the time to think about what the other person feels, needs, and wants.
Go ahead, Julie.
Well, I think we do need to listen to one another, but we need to remember that listening doesn't mean that we agree. And that when we leave a conversation, whether it's a listening session at the highest levels or in our communities, people are still going to be walking away with different opinions. It is okay to hold a different opinion, or it certainly should be in America, that we can hold those opinions because we have a long history of being able to coexist with differing opinions. I get the impression today that people, when we go to listening sessions, that if I don't end up agreeing with them and immediately jumping into their belief system or what they believe what needs to be done, that they don't think I've heard. But people do hear. Donald Trump, you know, to the degree to which he's willing and able to listen, that may or may not mean that he makes changes, because it may, the things he hears in those listening sessions may be counter to what he fundamentally believes.
A Nation Engaged there in Milwaukee. Grace Rodriguez was there for the conversation in Houston, Texas. James Jenkins in Sacramento, California. Sam Sanders of NPR among those helping moderate there in Sacramento. And I want to bring it to all of you, but we've got listeners coming right in here from Chicago. Renee is calling. Hi, Renee. You are on the air. Thank you for calling. What are you hearing? What do you think, Renee?
Hi, Tom. I just want to say that I think, you know, there are a couple of people said a lot about empathy. Mm-hmm. I think, especially in my city, we have a bad habit of looking at a person from afar and assuming that we know them because we saw somebody that looked like them in the news. And we have a really bad habit of not just trying to see the similarities. Just because I'm black and I live on the South Side doesn't mean that I don't try hard. It doesn't mean that I don't believe in hard work. And just because somebody that doesn't look like me that lives in a different neighborhood, I should not assume that they don't respect me because I'm black. And I think we've just sort of kind of gotten comfortable with putting people in boxes and treating them accordingly. And we get surprised when they don't act that way. And that we have to really try harder to look at people as individuals.
What if we don't, Renee? What if we stay on this beam?
We get disappointed. We get confused because you put people in boxes and you justify all of your actions based off of these boxes.
Yep.
And these people don't act that way, and then you don't have a reasonable excuse for that because, well, I did this because this is how they think. Well, that's not how I think. So now your actions aren't justified as opposed to taking them as individuals. And I'm not saying it's easy. It's harder. It takes more brain power to look at it as an individual and not judge them based off of simple, obvious things. But in the long run, we get treated better and we can work with each other.
Renee, I have to ask you, are you hopeful for that new kind of careful listening in the Donald Trump years?
I think it just takes time. I am hopeful for it. It just requires time. And, you know, there's, you know, people that live in the middle of America and that live on the coast, we all work hard. We all want the same things. And it's easier to look outside of our own homes and be like, you're the reason why my life isn't as good as I need it to be. But it just takes time. And I feel like if things happen enough, we'll just take that time.
Renee in Chicago, I really appreciate your call. James Jenkins, you were there in California. Did you see people listening to one another? We heard you offer to be tell someone that they need a Republican friend. You'd be their friend. But, you know, that's not exactly the tenor of a lot of conversation we've seen, at least in the media, James.
You're absolutely correct. And I like what Renee just said about us being put in boxes. And I think we have to get out of those boxes. I'm a little bit of a contrarian because what I do is I don't want to be around people who think like me all the time. That would not be any fun. So I want to hear different viewpoints. They test my own. So we were there and we had all kind of different people. Most of them probably I wouldn't agree with, probably about the majority of them that was sitting in the studio. However, like Renee said, we have a lot of the same things that we want at the end of the day. We want to be treated like human beings. And so those things we can find common ground on, care about each other and listen to each other. It was a great conversation, by the way, that we had here, I think so.
But Grace Rodriguez there in Houston, Texas, Renee in Chicago said we all want the same things. Is that obvious to you? Is that clear to you at this point, Grace?
I think it is. I think we all care about our children. We care about education. We care about everybody being healthy. I believe there is some common ground there. I also agree with James that we need to get to a place where we have productive conversation and productive debate. Those are critical if we focus on being helpful and not hurtful. I also wanted to bring back something that the Congresswoman earlier said about recommending that the president-elect be more thoughtful. How do we get to a point of where we're sharing sound ideas versus focusing on sound bites? I think that we tend to focus on, you know, the things that he's saying, but we need to be thinking more about how can we help him be more thoughtful about what he's going to do.
Let's go to John in Winchester, Virginia. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks. Hi. I just want to say, watching the debate and listening, and we keep hearing that we've got to be more compassionate with one another and have a dialogue.
Yeah.
We're way past that in this country. I mean, I see the other side as the enemy. I'm a progressive. I'm not a Democrat, but I'm an independent. And I see them unequivocally as the enemy. I'm sorry. It's the way it is. And I know an army of people that feel exactly the way I do. I'll take you.
Well, John, tell us one thing. If that's the way you see it, then what? Then what? If the other side is the enemy, then what?
That's the thing. Then what? I mean, I see things degrading in a very, very ugly way. I just don't see where there's any common ground anymore. The whole notion that we can have some kind of meaningful dialogue to me is ludicrous, especially when you have the Senate voting to cut benefits off for the vast majority of Americans vis-a-vis the ACA, Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. I mean, there's a chasm between the left and the right.
If we can't have meaningful dialogue, what happens, John? What happens if we cannot have meaningful dialogue? I mean, we're working it here.
And I don't see it. I see a really ugly future for America, to be honest with you. I mean, we keep ricocheting back and forth. There's got to be a more adult way to run the country. And there is. There's no mechanism.
John in Virginia, I appreciate your call. Sam Sanders, I want to bring it to you. But let me bring in some tape from your roundtable or town hall there. This was Mike Madrid, one of the attendees in Sacramento last week in this Nation Engaged conversation series across the country. And Mike saying American politics are, as
John in Virginia said, broken.
Mike Madrid, I'm a political consultant. I've been working in Republican politics for a very long time, 25 or 30 years, I guess. In full disclosure, I did not vote for Donald Trump. I certainly did not vote for Hillary Clinton either, before you start cheering. I believe we're at a point in American politics where the entire political structure is completely broken, and I think that the Trump presidency really embodies that. It concerns me as an American, it concerns me as a political professional, but candidly, the concerns that I'm hearing today, your fears, your concerns, I think are very real, but they are no different than what I was hearing from Republicans in other parts of the state, the country rather, in 2008. I heard words like fascist. I heard terms like dictatorship. I heard those same terms. I'm not here to judge your opinions on them. I know they're very strong, and I respect them. That's why I'm here. But what I am asking you to do today is not to support the Trump presidency, because I didn't support it, but what I am asking you to do is do a little bit of self-reflection on how complicit all of us are because of those entrenched beliefs that do not give, the language that we use when we talk to each other, and we talk about our political leadership, that's what drives us into the inability to get along together.
American Voices, there from California last week, where Sam Sanders was helping moderate as part of the Nation Engage series. Sam, you hear hope and a desire for dialogue here, and then other voices saying it's not there, it's not going to happen, the other side is the enemy, and your political consultant there in California saying it's just broken. You've been talking with people all through the election season, Sam, with the Politics Podcast and more. Where's hope in this picture?
So after we finished the event last Wednesday in Sacramento, 32 folks just talking politics from all stripes, mm-hmm. the conversation got pretty tense. And there was a moment where the room was just on edge. People's voices were kind of being raised, but we kind of pushed through it. And what was really interesting to me is when it was all said and done, no one really wanted to leave. People stuck around and they talked, and they talked to people that didn't agree with them, and they talked to people of different races and genders. And there were two people, a young white Republican and an older, a black activist, black Democrat, who were in the parking lot at Capital Radio for like an hour post-event, right?
Yeah.
And so this is not what you're going to see or hear on Twitter. It's not what you're going to see or hear in sound bites on TV or on the radio. But like, those are the conversations that are happening and I think continue to happen throughout the country. The thing is that they're difficult and they take time. I don't think that those two people would have had the talk that they had we not been there in the room for a good hour and a half to kind of just crack that egg, you know?
Yeah.
And what's going to have to happen going forward is Americans understanding that conversations about politics are inherently difficult, but they should happen, you know, anyway.
James Jenkins, you were there in California. What do you see as the hardest part here, the nut, if there's disagreement? Where do things really diverge? Where does the conversation, as Sam Sanders says, become really heavy and hard?
I think that we need thicker skins, for one thing. But to listen to someone who, again, I think it goes back to listening to someone who we don't agree with necessarily, but say, hey, you know what? Let's dig into that. Why do you disagree with it? Hey, what do you think about this? And asking those tough questions like Sam was talking about and cracking the egg, getting down beneath. I was able to, I'll say over the last couple of years, talk to several of my friends who were from the other side of the aisle. When we had these conversations, they actually came over to my side of the aisle, more they're thinking. They hadn't even realized that the things that they stood for and that were most important to them, they were voting against. And so once they understood that, they said, wow, I never thought about those things. And there might be someone who could add some insight like that to me as well. I'm open to that. So I think being open and being able to take the criticism and go down underneath the skin and get to the heart of the matter, and that can be painful sometimes.
Yep. You're an open-minded man, Mr. Jenkins. We need more of those, but there is a lot of people on edge, as we heard earlier in this hour, say right now. NPR and On Point are listening right across the country in Sacramento, in Durham, in Milwaukee, in Houston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Rocket Mortgage provides a transparent online process that helps you understand all the details of your home loan. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the right mortgage solution for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. 4 days before the swearing-in of Donald Trump on Inauguration Day, we are talking about the hopes and fears of Americans for the next 4 years, teaming up with NPR's A Nation Engaged project to turn the microphone to you and citizens across the country. 4 sit-downs in Sacramento, Milwaukee, Houston, Durham, North Carolina last week. Sam Sanders is with us, NPR reporter who co-hosted the Sacramento event. James Jenkins was there. He's a Donald Trump supporter. He's in Sacramento. Grace Rodriguez voted for Hillary Clinton. She's with us from Houston. And we would love to hear from you. What's your hope, your fear for the Trump years ahead? What does this country, what does your community need now? And on this Martin Luther King Day, what's the truth you want to speak to incoming power? Linda in Boston, thank you very much for calling, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling because I have found it extremely challenging to accept the rhetoric that President-elect Trump has. I have seen him encourage violence at his rallies. I have heard him speak in the most crass, vulgar way about women. And my own children had to hear him on TV. I've had to shut the TV off because he speaks so disrespectfully. And at the same time, I hear Obama speaking only with respect. Even though, you know, I'm an independent, I don't agree with both parties on lots of things. But the idea that we're not open if we refuse to accept racism and sexism, if we are told we have to call it something other than what it actually is, there are just some things that there's no bridge across. I'm not going to, you know, stand and act as though something that is racist is not racist just so we can all get along.
I hear you, Linda. Linda, hold on for just a second and stick with us. James Jenkins there in California, Trump's your man. Speak to Linda about her concern.
You know, let's just tell it like it is. Trump has never been considered a racist, as far as I know, until he started running against the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party seems to pull out the race card quite often in elections. And it's going to be like the boy who cried wolf, in my opinion, where when there's real racism, then nobody's going to believe them.
But were you listening to Donald Trump's comments? Did you?
I've listened to his comments.
You're an African-American. You heard him.
Yes. I listened to his comments, and I think that some of the comments that was coming from the other sides were a lot worse. And I think
saying that Hillary Clinton was more racially hard-edged than Donald Trump?
Well, let me back up for a second. Okay. I want to say, if you want to look at both candidates, I think they're both flawed. First of all, I want to be very upfront with that. Okay. If you want to make it about race, I think I can make a case that Hillary is more of a racist than Trump, if any of them was a racist, and I don't believe either one of them are racist. I mean, Hillary stood at Robert Byrd's, she said Robert Byrd was her mentor, and if you know his past, he was a former KKK recruiter. So
he had a lot more than that in his career, but okay,
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. And again, that's not my argument, but the racial things, and I think it's been taken out of context. So I don't believe he's a racist, and I don't believe Hillary was a racist.
Linda, speak to James.
He incited people with hatred and violence. I heard him tell his supporters at rallies to hit people, right? That's not the way that a president-elect should conduct himself. That's not the way that people speak to each other. He was so disrespectful. There's no way you can say that that man is a respectful person and treats other people with respect. And he's supposed to be the leader. He's supposed to be the moral authority as our leader.
Linda, I appreciate your call. Grace Rodriguez, what are you thinking as you hear that exchange?
I feel the same way Linda does. I've been really disappointed with the president-elect's rhetoric and how he seems to rally a lot of people with the divisive, hateful rhetoric that he's uses a lot of fear-mongering language. But, you know, whenever I think of that, I feel like I remember Michelle Obama when she said, when they go low, we go high. to not normalize the bad behavior, but show instead how we can be better, how we can embody better behavior.
Does
and
that
show
work?
Empathy and show talents.
Trump will be in the White House in 4.5 days.
Yeah, I know. Does it work? I don't know. Have we tried it? Has everybody tried it? I think there's a we have to really consider it. Like the 2020 census says that over half of Americans under the age of 18 are going to be racial minorities. So our future is only going to get more diverse. And the thing is, when we think about diversity, we only think of people of color. I remember going to a conference where we thought about who were in our blind spots. And I'm an Asian American woman who's the daughter of Filipino immigrants. I was born in New York, the most ethnically diverse city in the United States. And now I call Houston home, which is now the most ethnically diverse city in the United States. I've only known diversity for the majority of my life. So in my blind spot are the people from the industrial heartland, you know, these white blue-collar workers who are being displaced by automation, by a lot of production going overseas. So I need to start thinking about being empathetic towards them, because if I don't start it, then, you know, I can't ask them to without me being willing to meet them halfway.
This was another voice from Houston, where you were last week, Grace, as part of this conversation. This is Martha Wong, former Houston City Council member, state legislator, defending Trump's diversity in cabinet picks, saying he uses Twitter because that his message gets twisted otherwise. The panel kind of argues toward the end. You'll hear.
There are many things that I think some people have not picked up on that Donald Trump has said that some people are not listening to.
Well, I think
because
it's hard.
He has said that he does want to let the states make decisions about many things. The other things, he has already appointed 3 women in his cabinet. And of those 3 women, 2 of them are Asian. So it does have a diverse cabinet that he is working on. And there are also others. I believe that there's an Indian woman that is going to be over
United Nations.
So yeah, that there, he is looking at diversity. He is trying to be inclusive. And I think sometimes the rhetoric that goes on with the news is what you're hearing and not what he's hearing. And that's why he uses Twitter, because when he uses Twitter, it gets out there.
He uses Twitter and gets it out there. They're from Houston, Texas last week. Justin in New Orleans. Thank you for calling, Justin. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I want to say a couple of things that that pertain to hope and fear. First, I want to start with fear. One of my fears relates to what I heard Rudy Giuliani chanting and singing at the RNC. And he said Black Lives Matter is inherently racist. Now, Black Lives Matter is not being covered in the news a whole lot these days. But as a Black millennial, I think that it's something that I can't afford to let just fall by the wayside. For Rudy Giuliani to call that movement inherently racist says to me that there are racial problems in the system, that America, the government, and the system has been racist in the past. I think Barack Obama said something incredibly rich in his speech a couple of nights ago. He said centuries of Jim Crow and slavery don't just, you know, their effects aren't just all of a sudden vanished because, you know, of the civil rights era, something like that. I really do fear that if we continue to ignore the imbalances that exist in our system, that you're going to have a lot of bitter, and I'm just going to speak from
Justin, you're breaking up on us. I think we've got the gist of it, and I appreciate your call from New Orleans. The line's getting pretty bad there. Sam Sanders, you were there in Sacramento. So was James Jenkins. James says on the air that Trump wasn't considered racist, you know, before he was running here. Of course, a lot of people point to that very first announcement there in Trump Tower when he came out talking about Mexicans. But we've got plenty of people writing into us saying, well, what about Trump and his father? They were sued by the Justice Department for discriminatory housing politics in New York way back, settled out of court. That was early on. What was the tenor or the message in the room, Sam, about President-elect Trump himself and his posture on race?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about race and gender, but I think what happened as the conversation went on is that people came to accept that just because someone voted for Trump or for Hillary Clinton doesn't mean that they support all that their candidates said or did. And I think conversations like the ones that we had allow people to look at Trump supporters or Clinton supporters as their own people who have their own thoughts and fears that are separate from their candidates of their choice. And it's really hard to do that unless you have a face-to-face conversation. When you're talking to Trump supporters online, you only think about them through the lens of that candidate and the worst things that they've said. But Trump supporters are really diverse, and I've seen that throughout the entire year. There are people from all walks of life, and a lot of them will say directly that they aren't in lockstep with Trump and all that he says and does.
Let's go to Tim in Madawaska, Maine. Tim, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just called to tell everybody, you know, this is America, and I feel like nobody's crying about this election except for the losers. I think we should pull together and try to make America what it can be. All this bickering over something, you know, that we didn't vote for a savior. We voted for president.
Are you hopeful, Tim, about what will come under Donald Trump?
I'm always hopeful. America's a great place to be if you look at the rest of the world.
Well, yes, and that can cut two ways these days, as Donald Trump himself says sometimes. But I appreciate your call very much. I mean, yeah, pull together. It sounds great. Is it going to be rocky sometimes? I would say from some of these conversations, it may be. Look, think about the environment, for example. I've got some tape here from yours, Sam, in Sacramento. Eric, we heard from him a little before, but he said that job one is the economy, and he's a Trump supporter. And he says, how do you do that? Well, tear up some environmental regulations. Here it was.
Hi, my name's Eric. I am a communication strategist. I'm from Roseville. That's up in Placer County. And if I could tell Donald Trump what I feel he should do on his first day in office, I would say that we need jobs. We need to grow our economy.
What's the best way to do that?
Number one, tear up the Clean Power Plan. That was the EPA's most draconian regulation in history, most expensive regulation. Federalized energy policy is going to drive energy costs through the nation through the roof. And it was done without congressional approval, too. So he should tear up the Clean Power Plan. Number two, approve Keystone XL, create American jobs, unlock a massive source of energy. And number three, take those oil and gas projects that have been stuck in red tape for years and years and give them the green light. We have tremendous ability to create good jobs, to uplift all communities, and to do it through energy.
Trump supporter says tear up the Clean Power Plan, approve Keystone XL, the pipeline, unlock oil and gas projects. And right there at the NPR meeting in Sacramento, immediate pushback. Here it was.
Well, Eric, we Lori Friedman from Davis, California, so you kind of probably know where I stand. And we chatted before over the food, and it was nice to meet you, but I think we disagree, because I think the biggest challenge facing humankind is climate change. And I think the cockroaches will survive. Things will go on, but we're in serious danger. And I would take all that. I wouldn't open up Keystone. I think it's a bad, it's dirty oil. I'd much rather, the way the world is going is towards renewable energy. And China is, it was on the news today that China is going big into renewable energy, and we're going to be left behind. So that's where I think, that's the future.
Can I just say something?
Sure.
And I hear that. But I think almost all of us here probably came in cars powered by gas. So for the time being, we are still a society and in a world, really, that is backed by, that's run by fossil fuels.
Sam Sanders, that was your conversation. It sounds like it's going to take about 2 seconds for things to be hot and heavy in Washington on that front.
Yeah, I mean, but I think what you heard was that they weren't yelling.
Yeah.
Like, these are two people who were on very different sides of one issue, and they were able to talk civilly. And that was a beautiful thing. I'm not sure if they reached a consensus on what to do about climate change.
I do not think so from what I've heard.
But they didn't yell, so I appreciate
that. Well, okay. Sometimes, as you say, though, Sam, you got to crack the eggs to make the omelet. It may take some yelling here. I don't know, but then how much is too much? Kevin in Columbia, South Carolina. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I basically, in regard to our political discourse, it's in bad shape. And I was one of the few in my social circle who predicted that Donald Trump would win. And I based that strictly off of what I read on Facebook, the back and forth between regular American citizens. And it was extremely ugly and nasty.
Are you hopeful now, Kevin? Are you hopeful now?
No. I'm originally from New York. I kind of have watched Donald Trump all my life. You basically had an individual that he checked the wind. He sensed, you know, what the mood of a certain demographic was, and he capitalized on it. It's marketing. That's how he got to be what he is.
You voted for him?
No, no.
Oh, pardon me. I misunderstood. No, I see. I got it. The other way. One more. Melody in Memphis, Tennessee. Melody, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Yes, I think what we need to do is peacefully protest and speak our minds about the issues that are important to us. And for me, it's environmental protection. I happen to have spent a good amount of time in China. I don't want our air to be what China's is and what Poland's is presently. I'm worried about a nuclear cataclysm because I think he's reactive and not thoughtful. And then no one seems to speak about the Concurrent Act for Pediatrics that's part of the
How are you going to speak your mind, Melody? How are you going to speak your mind?
Well, I've been speaking my mind online, and I'm going to the march in Washington, and I'm bringing two women who couldn't afford to go there themselves.
The Women's March, that's coming right up. There are a lot of voices raised in this country right now. Let's hope it's in a productive way. Grace, did you come out of your conversation in Houston, Texas, more hopeful?
Mixed. I would say I'm definitely hopeful that the power in the people to affect change and to start coming together to solve the problems, these problems together. I'm hopeful about that.
James, are we going to pull together or battle it out all the way?
Well, it depends on what the people who are opposing Trump want to do. I think he's reached out, like someone said, and I think he's doing a good job of that. So,
Sam Sanders, you're going to continue listening, no doubt. More Nation Engaged to come?
Oh, yeah. All day, every day.
All day, every day on NPR and right here with On Point. Sam Sanders, Grace Rodriguez, James Jenkins, our thanks to you all. And to our viewers on Facebook Live, thanks for joining us as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.